He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is John Katzimatidis. TGIF. Thank God it is Friday. And we have a full studio again today. And we have Governor David Paterson. How are you, David?
Very good, John.
And Judge Richard Weinberg.
Okay, nice to see you all. Thank you.
Okay. And, of course, my sidekick here, Lydia Serrani. And what's going on, Lydia?
Breaking news, WABC.
Well, it turns out it was the White House who ordered the FBI to investigate school boards and parents and comparing them to domestic terrorists.
Okay, wait. I don't know if you said it right. Was it the White House that ordered the Justice Department to do it? Or was it the White House? Judge Weinberg?
This is very troubling. What I've heard reported so far is that the White House was working with the School Board Association to create the letter, and then the White House then put pressure on the Justice Department to send out the Garland missive.
Did Garland do that then, based on the White House's order?
Well, that seems to be the allegation, which is very, very troubling.
Well, that's what you had said from the beginning, Judge. You had said that Merrick Garland wouldn't do something like this if it were not for the President Biden authorizing it.
This, of course. And the Justice Department would not be doing this unless Garland signed off on it.
I wonder what Mr. Dewinsky would say. He knows Mr. Garland.
Well, he was – Professor Dershowitz was very reluctant to get into discussion about Judge Garland's role in this. But it's very, very troubling because a man of great reputation who is a potential – member of the Supreme Court of the United States is now being put in a position where we have a blame game going on back and forth. Who did what and why?
So if that happened from the White House, did the president do it himself? Or who's calling the shots at the White House? Governor Paterson, any ideas?
Well, whoever was calling the shots should have realized that local disputes, whether they're in a bar or at a school board meeting or any other local place, are handled by the local police. Now, if there's some evidence that there's an organized effort to stop government from working, but I don't think that was the case. It's just a lot of angry parents dealing with the COVID virus, dealing with how often the schools can be open and that kind of thing. And it's just why you would inject yourself from the federal level into this issue.
I'll tell you why. They want to create a narrative. The president just said yesterday at the MLK Memorial that the greatest threat, he said it again, the greatest threat now facing our democracy is white supremacy. How many domestic terrorists
and
white...
He actually said that?
He said it again yesterday. He said it again yesterday. We have it in the news brief. He said it again yesterday. He said the greatest threat...
He's been saying that consistently.
He's been... Because they're trying to create this narrative. That's what's going
on. And the facts do not substantiate that. The greatest threats to this country are the invasion from the border and Islamic terrorism. Those are the greatest threats.
Governor Paterson, what do you think the greatest threats to our country right now are?
Probably talk radio.
This is what the president just said yesterday.
Okay.
I've said it before, and all my colleagues here know it. According to the United States Intelligence Committee, domestic terrorism from white supremacists is the most lethal terrorist threat in the homeland.
You know what's interesting about that is that that is what they said a year and a half ago. But certainly the way the border is now and the other Islamic terrorist threats that have occurred just in the last year, even if they ever said it, it's way outdated. It's anachronistic for him to say that now.
Well, he's saying, so why do you think, John Katzimatidis, why do you think the president keeps on saying that white supremacy is the greatest threat now facing our nation?
I guess, is it possible he's trying to get his base up? I mean, he always said he is the black president. Has he said that, Governor?
Well, no, that was Bill Clinton who said he was the black president.
Well, who said it?
But he didn't say it.
No. He said, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black.
You ain't black.
That's correct. That's what he did say. So I do think that he
is. So he's threatening black people, saying they're not black unless they vote for him.
But he's pandering.
But it's actually having the reverse effect. I think the base was there and came out for him in 2016 what you would want to do is to keep the coalition that elected you together, but he's totally disrupted it. He could, the states that he won, that Hillary lost, he couldn't win one of them right now.
His polls are down, down, down. There's not confidence on what he's doing on the border. There's not confidence what he's doing in terms of national security with respect to the Afghanistan threat. There's no confidence with respect to economics. And is losing numbers amongst the independents,
well,
which were decisive.
Well, I think there's no confidence what he's doing with China. There's no confidence what he did with Afghanistan. There is no confidence, like you said, what's going on in the border. And we have another...
Breaking news, WABC.
The border crisis is spiraling out of control. There's been a record number of encounters, 192,000 in September. 192,000 encounters by border control. That's just how many migrants they caught, never mind how many actually came in through the country. It's just getting so out of control. So let me ask you this, John Katz.
Now, wait, Judge, before you said there's three different problems with the border. Tell us about your three problems.
Okay. The three problems at the border as follows. One, you have a fentanyl crisis, which is coming in record numbers. Number two, you have the national security with the gangs coming in and infiltrating our cities. Number three, you have the spread of COVID because tens of thousands of people are being moved into the heartland. They've never been tested. And they've never been vaccinated. It's a three-pronged disaster at the border.
And in addition, some of those people coming from the border, the government itself is flying people into Westchester or other places.
Right, in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, they're flying people into Westchester and all across the country. Thousands of people, they're not vaccinated. We don't know what diseases they have. Meanwhile, they're talking about firing our firefighters, police officers, nurses, doctors, you name it, if they don't get vaccinated. How does that make any sense? And in Chicago, half of the police force is threatening to quit. I mean, they could be fired, and there's a crime crisis there as well.
When you start penalizing the people who did the most as a frontline workers during the COVID situation, you're talking about fire, you're talking about EMS, you're talking about police, you're talking about the hospital workers, the nurses, and you penalize these people, that's wrong. Number two, you're jeopardizing the security of our citizenry by taking these people off their jobs when we need them again in a very short period of time. And it's not easy to say, well, we'll get rid of them and they'll be replaced. Replaced by whom? There's a shortage of nurses now, and you have long-term requirements to get people from other countries to come in as nurses.
I was really surprised by the action taken against the healthcare workers because many of them acquired the virus while treating other people. They didn't have the capacity. This is before the vaccines existed. So this is a pretty dangerous position to be in. Seemed a little inhumane. I mean, require testing weekly, but firing people who put their lives in danger like that is prohibited.
What about natural immunity? Why aren't we following the science? We know that natural immunity could be as effective, if not more effective, than the vaccine. And to threaten our heroes, our frontline workers, saying you'll be out of a job and you can't collect unemployment, you won't have insurance. This is unbelievable that this is happening in America.
And what's really scary about this whole situation is that this has happened in the first 9 months of this administration. And problems are escalating on many, many fronts. And what do you respond to first? You respond to the national border situation, our abandonment of the situation in Afghanistan, where we've turned over the lithium. The lithium is made in Afghanistan. You need lithium for the batteries. Everybody wants to go electric. And who makes the batteries? China. And at the same time, they're killing fossil fuel and natural gas in this country. This is a very, very dangerous situation. It's one thing after another that's putting this country at great risk.
In California, the average price of gasoline there is about $5.50. And in one town, Gorda, California, it's notoriously known for having high gas prices. It's $7.59. So gas prices are spiraling out of control. John Katzmatidis, you predicted this way back when President Biden first came into office. is inflation here to stay? The tax on the middle class, the tax on the poor?
Right now, the word inflation, I hate to use it because the real word is tax on the poor. The wealthy people, whether they pay $4 a gallon or $5 a gallon, it's going to happen. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But the money on the middle class and the poor, $5, $6 a gallon, it's going to hurt them a great deal.
Absolutely.
And it's going to also hurt the price of food. It's going to hurt the price of clothing, the price of airline tickets. It just flows downhill. And what has happened, and a lot of Democratic candidates, I understand, Democratic legislators, mm-hmm. are telling the White House, enough is enough. Don't make oil the enemy of the White House.
I think, John, that's going to go on quietly until some of these legislators, the congressional legislators and the U.S. senators, are running for re-election, and they start to see the polling in their districts. They're going to be vocal and they're going to be loud. They are giving the president the benefit of the doubt by not saying anything right now, hoping that he'll change his course. But I think that they're all in a lot of trouble.
Well, it's even more problematic, Governor, and I'll tell you why. Right now, we have the mayor of the city of New York and the controller of the city of New York want to put in $8 billion for investments of pension fund money, and they want to put that pension fund money into so-called feel-good green energy policies. And that's a very dangerous thing because they have a fiduciary duty to make sure the investments are done wisely and well.
But you know who also has a fiduciary duty? Whoever follows them in January. And if they have any idea of what they're doing, they won't allow this to happen. A lot of elected officials, and I'm surprised particularly at the controller, do these dramatic things on the way
out.
How
can they move? He's a controller for 70 more days, 60 more days, and they're moving $8 billion. Don't they have a responsibility to get a return on investment? And they have a personal fiduciary responsibility to get a return on investment versus what they think is politically good for their future.
Well, they do, but in case they don't, the good news is that the problem they're creating, the controller and mayor that replaced them this January are going to have to live with it, and I highly doubt that they'll let this go on.
Well,
this is showtime.
Now, there's one more item we have to cover before the next break. We have another breaking news.
Breaking news, WABC.
There's a constitutional amendment being proposed this November that will bring an avalanche of lawsuits. So explain for us, Judge Weinberg, about this.
There's a proposition this November 2nd in New York State that would create a constitutional right to clean air and clean water. Now, that sounds absolutely wonderful. What that does is opens the floodgates to litigation to enforce that so-called constitutional right, whatever that means, without guidelines. It creates a floodgate of an opportunity for left-wing legislatures, Green New Deal types, to introduce legislation to fill in the gaps. There's going to be more legislation. There's going to be more litigation, a cottage industry for the trial lawyers. The costs to business people to defend against these lawsuits will be enormous. And the cost to consumers will be enormous because all of those business costs, as John Castells correctly points out, flow right back to consumers ultimately.
So it will also be a cost of the state because in many respects, the state will not have the resources, won't have the money to implement exactly what the Constitution is telling it to do.
Judge, Governor, tell our listeners how many constitutional items are there on the November 2nd, and should they vote no on all of them?
Okay, the easy answer, the only one they should vote yes on is expanding the jurisdiction of the civil court of the city of New York from $25,000 a case to $50,000 a case. Everything else is a no. The others have to do with abolishing restrictions on how you vote. So, for example, right now to register, you have to vote. You have to have registered 10 days before the election. They're providing for a change to that so you can have same-day registration. Also, they're providing for an amendment that will allow mass ballot, absentee ballots, with no explanations of why you're getting this ballot and to do mass ballots. As President Carter and Secretary Baker pointed out in their commission, this is an invitation to fraud in elections, to loss of election integrity.
So vote no on that, where you have mass ballots going out to the whole world saying, oh, you know.
So the only one of the five propositions that I would support and I would vote for is raising the jurisdiction of the Civil Court of the City of New York from 25,000 to 50,000. All the others are no good. The last one that's on the ballot that's very, very dangerous is it takes away any real role for the minority party in this state, the Republican Party, to have any voice in legislative redistricting, whether you're talking about Congress.
No checks and balances.
No checks and balances. You have a supermajority in the legislature. They can do whatever they want. They can carve up and gerrymander the lines any way they want to do it.
So your recommendation,
I would have to vote no on that, because I remember when they were carving up the lines the other way. Years ago, and so I've got to be consistent. I'll vote no.
Vote no. Vote no. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to have Larry Kudlow to give us what the heck is going on with the economy.
You're commuting home with Katz at Night. Now, here's John Katzimatidis on 77 WABC.
Well, TGIF, thank God it's Friday. The markets are closed, and what does that mean? That means with us today is Larry Kudlow to tell us what the heck is going on, what happened, and what we'll hope for. And then, whatever he doesn't tell us, I'll be listening to the Kudlow Show on WABCRadio.com worldwide and on 770 on WABC in the tri-state area. Good afternoon, Larry Kudlow. Thank God it's Friday.
Hello, John. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Did you enjoy the Cardinals gala last night, the Al Smith dinner?
Yes, I did. I thought it was a lovely dinner. Ironically, or coincidentally, I had had lunch with the Zemmins earlier in the day with a group of people. But it was a lovely event, and I was glad to be part of it. And I thought you looked very spiffy, John, in your white tie and tails.
I wear it once a year when the Cardinal decrees it.
Yes. In order to get to heaven, you have to have white tie and tails. Anyway, listen, the big news this week, I think, was the demise and decline of this crazy big government socialist tax and spend bill in Washington, D.C. And there are two reasons for that. One of them is Joe Manchin, and the other is Kyrsten Sinema. Manchin is strongly against all the spending, and he insists on means tests and work requirements. He also is against the Green New Deal, and he really put a dagger into both, especially the Green New Deal parts. And Senator Sinema put a dagger into all these proposed tax hikes. She says no to the higher corporate tax, no to a higher individual tax, no to a higher capital gains tax. The Democrats are flummoxed. They're in complete disarray. They are pointing fingers and blaming at each other. Of course, they're blaming Manchin and Sinema because they're the only moderates left in the Senate. And I'm loving it because, you know, I think it's very simple. Save America and kill the bill.
Wow. Wow. And you feel that we're headed to that direction and that would be good for America. Is that why the market is so strong? Everybody is listening to you?
I think, John, that's a key reason. I really do.
Well, let me know when you say something wrong so I can short.
The socialist bill's going down. And the market's going up. By the way, the market also has good, very good profits. Profits are the mother's milk of stocks, and profits are coming in on the high side everywhere. So companies are making money despite, you know, issues about supply chains and inflation and labor shortages. But listen, if that bill ever went through with all these massive tax increases, which would kill profits, by the way, absolutely slaughter profits, you would lose jobs and lower wages, and you would shrink the economy. I mean, the number of economic models are showing that. And I know this thing's been weighing on the stock market because the stock market needs profits. Businesses, in order to grow, need profits. And the left-wing progressives in the White House and the Congress don't like profits, and they don't care about business. And so they're ignorant of how this economy works. But Americans are full of common sense, and that common sense is leading them to say, we don't want to transform America in some radical direction. We don't want to transform the culture, and we don't want to transform the economy. We could have some tweaks and here and there that hopefully will lead to greater prosperity. But this transformation theme is going down. Biden's going down. I mean, it's fascinating to me. So, yeah, it's a seesaw. Washington down, stocks up.
I want your opinion, Larry Kudlow. I've said on Fox Business last week and the week before that with the CEOs are scared. They're scared that if their earnings are off by more than by a penny, Wall Street trashes them. And when they see the price increases coming about, whether it's oil, when they see the their product is being delayed in the Pacific, not coming through, they will raise prices regardless if they cost them more themselves just to be ahead of the curve. Am I wrong or am I right?
Well, no, I think you're right. But look, if you miss on earnings, at least in the short run, you'll pay the price. I don't know about the long run, but in the short run. But I think on these other issues, look, the inflation is lasting longer than I and others thought. Frankly, I'm worried now not only about supply shortages and the Los Angeles port. I'm worried that the Federal Reserve keeps pumping money into the economy, free money. And that could mean a longer-term inflation. That's my biggest concern. Short run, by the way, I must say, higher inflation is actually good for profits. Higher inflation is good for profits. Retail sales are very strong. The economy is very strong. We're going to get a lousy report for GDP next week because there were no cars available for consumers to buy. Retail sales will be very soft there. But actually, fundamentally, unemployment claims are the lowest since the pandemic. People are getting away from all the pandemic plus-ups for unemployment benefits. Consumers are strong. Businesses are very profitable, which is very bullish. Banks are outperforming. Energy is outperforming. Industrials are outperforming. And you know, hopefully Washington won't screw it up by taxing everything that moves.
Larry Kudlow, maybe you could tell the American people the truth. My lease was up on my car 6-7 months ago, and all I am is getting jerked off by the car dealer. Says, oh, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming, and it's almost 7 months now. Well, what's going on?
Well, you mean your car is coming, but it's 7 months late.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is a refrain. A lot of this has happened in the third quarter. That's why the GDP is going to be soft. Now, I don't know where the car is coming from, John, but the parts, probably including the chips, semiconductors, are tied up in this crazy story in the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach. And I have thought on this. I'm very critical of this. Biden didn't do a thing about it. His transportation secretary, Buttigieg, didn't do a thing about it. And it's become a national disgrace, no question about it. So the Longshoremen Union would not run 24/7. They were getting off duty at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Now, as the crisis deepened, you got this week, at least a commitment to go 24/7. The ports weren't even open 24/7. That's terrible. That's a union issue, and that's a local government issue. The other thing is, everybody's telling me these ports have run very badly, John. You wouldn't let them run the way they're running. They avoid and oppose any forms of automation. And you need the best possible equipment to unload these containers get them off the ships, open them, and then parcel them out. So that's the problem. You can't fight automation. You can't fight technology. Now, the other side of the coin is, and again, I don't know if this affects your car, but there's a shortage of truck drivers. Now, this is a long-term story, but long-haul truck drivers, who are making a lot of money, by the way, it could be $150,000 a year, but they're very short supply. And a few people have suggested that you lower the commercial driver's license age from 21 to 18, and that that would attract a lot of younger people, quite possibly a lot of women. And the other thing is they should waive a law that was in Congress years ago that limited trucking to an 11-hour haul. They would should push that probably back. I don't recall. I think it was a 14-hour haul. So there are some things that can be done and weren't being done, and that's why you can't get hold of your car. I don't know the whole story.
Well, it's not only my car. It's a lot of people's cars. It's not only us. That's why it's the whole GDP. It's not – I don't want to mention the brand I'm buying – but it's almost across the board on brands.
My sister went to go buy a car, and the MSRP said one price. And you know normally how you kind of haggle that MSRP?
Yeah, you get 10% off.
Right. Well, the dealer wanted to charge her an extra $5,000 to $10,000 above the MSRP. What's that about, Larry?
Same thing. They only have X amount of cars.
Inventory.
If you only have 10 oranges to sell mm-hmm. and 20 people want them, you charge little bit more.
Supply and demand.
Yep. Look, this will work itself out, okay? This will work itself out. But it surely is taking longer. And again, I would argue that the government should intervene less. Don't put regulations. Don't go for unionization. Let private enterprise, let free markets work. But keep these ports open. You know, we don't have this problem in the East Coast. The ports of New York and Baltimore, which are gigantic ports, did not have backlog. It was only out there in California, and that's why I raised the issue of why the ports were closed and why the longshoremen
and Larry,
didn't want to work.
There was an article in one of the papers this morning that there might be a 400% increase in toys. I don't know if you saw that. And that is mind-boggling.
Wait, a 400% increase in...
toys.
So the price of toys?
Price of toys for Christmas.
Oh, price of toys. Well, I hope not. But these things are possible. It's all possible. And it's very, very difficult. I understand it's very difficult.
Larry,
it'll work itself out, but it's going to take a while.
Larry Kudlow, thank you for bringing the truth to all the American people. You're on Fox Business Monday through Friday between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock, and then on Saturdays on WABCRadio.com on 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And thank you so much for telling the people the truth.
John, save America, kill the bill.
I agree with you. Save America, kill the bill. I'll be listening to you tomorrow at 10 o'clock.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take a break, and what we have is Gordon G. Chang coming back to tell us the truth of what's going on in the Pacific. Thank God it's Friday, and I'm going to have part of the weekend off, but always busy.
You're always working. Who are you kidding?
And with us today to give us an update what's going on in the Pacific, we have Gordon G. Chang. Gordon, how are you today?
I'm fine, John, and thank you so much.
Give us an update of what's going on.
Well, the most important thing was that President Biden on Thursday said he would defend Taiwan. That was in relation to a question from Anderson Cooper during a CNN town hall. But unfortunately, both the White House and the Pentagon cleaned up, as they say, his remarks, saying that there was no change in U.S. policy. And I think the cleanup by both the White House and the Pentagon sort of undermined deterrence because it said to China that we're really not serious and that the president is not in charge.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's two problems there.
Gordon, Gordon Chang, what did you think of the president's performance last night? Because he did seem to fumble a lot, and It just it almost made us seem vulnerable.
Yes, well, clearly in response to a question on supply chain problems, the president obviously was muddled. He couldn't remember the name of America's most important port at this moment. This was in connection with Long Beach, where there are a number of big container ships, about 60 to 70 of them are now waiting to be unloaded. And unfortunately, the president just got caught in a cloud. And Anderson Cooper actually had to answer the question for him. And people today are talking about President Anderson Cooper.
What else is going on? What's in the? We just had Larry Kudlow on before, and all the cars are delayed coming in from all over the world. What's causing these delays? Is it the chip problem? And where are those chips supposed to be coming from?
Yeah, well, the chips are a lot of them are made in Taiwan. Some of them are made in China. There is our supply chain disruptions right now are really extraordinary, and there are a lot of reasons for them, both on both sides of the Pacific. So, for instance, we've got worker shortages. We've got rolling power blackouts in China, COVID-19 lockdowns right now in China. There are about 8 of them, including in Beijing. On our side, we've got misguided policies. So, for instance, there are environmental rules on which trucks can enter the Long Beach port. And also, when we think about this, there was a lot of pent-up demand for products after COVID-19, but it shouldn't have stressed the supply chains the way it did. We should be making our products for Americans in America, or at least very close to our borders in our own hemisphere.
Are we getting any better? What do you hear? When COVID started 2 years ago, Americans learned that the antibiotic problem, that almost 90%, 95% of antibiotics are being made in China, et cetera, et cetera. Have you, is there any update on that?
Well, we still are overly dependent on China. You know, President Trump, in his last months in office, went for a $765 million loan to Eastman Kodak, so that it could make active pharmaceutical ingredients in the United States. That effort didn't go forward like we wanted to, but we do need, and even though it's industrial policy, we do need to make pharmaceuticals and APIs, as they are called in our country. So right now, we are extraordinarily dependent on the Chinese still. And we've known about this problem now, as you say, and it's been very graphically demonstrated to us for 2 years, and we're not making any progress, especially under the Biden administration.
Gordon, what can we do about the fentanyl problem coming in from China and coming through our border in Mexico?
The first thing we have to do is recognize that the Communist Party of China wants the fentanyl gangs to sell these drugs surreptitiously in the United States. These gangs are large. They're far-flung. They launder their money through China's state banking system. Communist Party knows about it in a near-total surveillance state. And that means that we need to start sanctioning the Communist Party in China and cutting off trade because they are killing Americans. Last year, there were perhaps 53,000 fentanyl deaths. This is deaths from fentanyl itself and also from methamphetamines and cocaine, which are mixed with fentanyl these days. So we have to recognize who the criminal is. The criminal is the Communist Party of China and the Chinese central government.
And it's even worse because I've read about the counterfeit pharmaceuticals being laced with fentanyl. So it's not just people who are drug addicted using fentanyl. It's people, innocent people, thinking they're taking safe medicines. And in fact, it's laced with fentanyl.
I mean, the Communist Party system is malicious, and it's very difficult for us because we come from a democracy. We tend to think the best of people, and we're having trouble comprehending the notion of evil. And there are many evil aspects of the Communist Party, including just what you talked about, taking fentanyl and putting it into legal pharmaceuticals.
And a striking thing, Gordon, this is David Patterson, is that there aren't really that many members of the Communist Party, but the damage that they can do worldwide is ever increasing, and the technological advantage that China has over us seems to be expanding at this point.
Well, yes. And, you know, we had the Pentagon software chief, the first one, actually resigned, saying that the struggle was over and that China won. Now, I don't think it's quite that bad, but it does highlight the fact that we are behind in certain critical technologies. And artificial intelligence is one where we're having trouble keeping up. Part of it is, not only is it a question of tech, it's also a question of data. China can feed all the data into the world, into their AI systems, and that makes them better because we can't do that. We're in a democracy. We have limitations on what we can put into our artificial intelligence systems. So we've got to realize that we've got some catching up to do.
The other big news headline this morning in cybersecurity was that Russia and possibly China was setting up a cyber curtain. Is that possible?
Setting up a cyber...
A curtain. In other words, not being able to for their own people to reach certain websites, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's not only possible, it's happening right now. So, for instance, Yahoo, the news aggregator, was taken off the Apple store in China. And that was the last real important Western news source. So Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, has been closing down Western news sources and Western apps to the Chinese. It is really very much more than a bamboo curtain, as they said in the 1950s. He really means to cut off the West and cut off the foreign world entirely to the Chinese people. So this is something where we've got to recognize they don't allow our apps in their country. So why are we allowing Chinese apps in our country? This is a question of reciprocity, and it's important for us to protect our websites and our media sources.
Gordon, thank you so much. We have to take a hard break, and we're looking forward to talking to you again next week. And everybody, at Gordon G. Chang. If you want his Twitter, that is it. And you'll find out what's going on ASAP. Thank you. Let's take a break.
A common sense recap of the day's biggest stories. It's John Katzimatidis and Cats at Night on 77 WABC.
We are back. And now to get a recap and an update from Dr. Peter Michalos on what's going on in the world of medicine. Dr. Michalos.
How are you, team? I'd like to share some exciting news that we heard about this week, that genetically modified pig kidneys were used. And what they did was they modified these pigs so that the immune system didn't recognize them as foreign. And the doctor, who was actually a organ transplant recipient himself at NYU, Dr. Montgomery, who had received a heart transplant in the past, did the procedure, and they had a patient who was brain dead and had been a consenting organ donor, and the family agreed, and they put this kidney from a pig that was genetically modified so that it wouldn't reject. So there's a big shortage of kidneys around the country, and now he said that within the decade we'll be able to transplant kidneys from pigs that have been modified so that the body does not reject them. We already have been using for many years valves in the heart from pigs, but now they'll be able to address the organ shortages, and they might even be able, they said, to use it for organs like the liver as well. So that was great, exciting news for people with kidney disease on waiting lists to get new kidneys. The other exciting news is the whole science of epigenetic, where it's a science about activating or deactivating genes and reprogramming the DNA of mature cells and transferring them back and making them into younger cells. And they did this cell reprogramming in an eye, and they did it in mice, and now they've done it in apes, and they're going to start human trials in 12 months where they restored blindness from glaucoma, and retinal cells were regenerated, and that's going to bring a lot of hope to people with eye diseases who've had from either illness, injury, or aging, and that's really amazing, the whole field of cell reprogramming. So that's why I tell people, don't attack the U.S. big pharma, because without the research and development money, we're not going to see all these exciting new developments. So I always tell people, be careful what you wish for, and we want to continue in the United States to be the leaders.
Also, if we allow them to attack big pharma on especially research and development, I mean, we're not going to have the research. Look what happened when President Trump allowed Big Pharma and gave him certain breaks to have warp speed on coming up with the vaccine. We've never had a vaccine in 6 months in our lives.
Absolutely, because they're people that were incentivized because they were prepaid in addition to the PREP Act, which was basically it gave them tort reform, at least for the next 4 years, where you can't sue them for side effects, you can't sue the FDA, and you can't sue employers. So that was how they got them back into the vaccine business. And also the Regeneron antibody was developed using a mouse that was genetically engineered that Dr. George Yancopoulos did at Regeneron. And they made a mouse that mimics the human immune system. And that's how they made an antibody against Ebola. That's how they made an antibody against the COVID, which is helping so many people. So we have to be careful what we wish for, and we can't attack Big Pharma. We have to support research and development. The rest of the world, what new drugs have come out of Europe or Canada or South? They're wonderful countries.
Nothing.
But what?
Nothing.
They wait for us. We develop it when our patents expire, and everybody just duplicates the generic drugs.
Any update on the COVID vaccines?
Well, I just want to remind our audience, because we're here to help people, that if you get sick and you have symptoms, the first phase, the first 3-4 days, the viral replication phase, go get treatment. Get a PCR test. If you're eligible, get the monoclonal antibodies, and you will get better and get treatment. And write to your politicians to push the FDA to get this oral antiviral molnupiravir by Merck out soon. And that's going to be like Tamiflu for coronavirus. And I think that's going to be a major game changer and keep people out of the hospital and save many lives and get us out of this mess so we can move on. And, we hope it'll be sooner than later.
Dr. Peter Michalos, thank you for your updates. Thank you for telling the American people the truth and keeping us updated on our health. I already started my 14 to 16 hour a day starvation diet on a daily basis. Is that what we call it?
The intermittent fasting?
Intermittent fasting. Let your gut rest at night, and you're amazing
how you
lose weight.
Already, yes. I have more energy and I feel good. So,
yeah, that's fantastic. Well, that's what we're here on WABC, to help people, keep people informed, and get the truth out.
Well, thank you, Dr. Peter Michalos, and we'll catch up with you soon. I might even see you for breakfast tomorrow. You never know. Judge Richard Weinberg, you might see us for breakfast
I'll
tomorrow.
I'll see you and the doctor tomorrow morning.
And David Patterson, you're staying in the city, I understand?
I'm staying in the city, and I'll go down and take those trials as soon as they start.
Thank you, and Lydia Serrano, I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you so much.
And this is John Katsimatidis, and I wish everybody a great weekend. And God bless New York, God bless New Jersey, God bless Connecticut, God bless America.